Translation: The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear sons of the King, I am very pleased with you, very pleased by the friendly relationship among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish all of you good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me." Krishna is pleased that they're so cooperative and they have good relationships.
Yeah.
In devotional service. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Since the sons of King Pichinabharhishat were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Pichinabharhishat was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests. This was one of Prabhupada's standard preaching arguments. In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions, and consequently, they cannot be united. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within the material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstances. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benedictions to his devotees, as indicated in this verse. We can see that the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the sons of King Prishinabharhisat. Om Agyan Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukham Kurdau Tivachalam Pongun Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinatarnam Shri Rupa Shri Sanatana Bhatta Raguna Shri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Rasa Raguna Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swaparandikam Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityanando Suhoruto Gauradaye Pushavantu Chitro Sando Tamodo Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Nande Gauratvishe Nama Tavasmi Radhikanatha Karmana Manasagiran Krishna kante tavai vasmi uvame vagatirvama Govinda valabedate parteye tvamaham sada Tvadiyayati janatu govindo mantvayasaha Radhe vrindava nadishe karunamrita vahini Kripaya nijaparaja dasyam mahyam padiyatam Tavai vasmi, tavai vasmi, na jivami tvaya vina, iti vigyaya devi tvam nayamam charanantikam. Vanchakalpaturubhyascha, kribasindubhyevacha, patijanam avanebhyo, vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Krishna says here that he is Suhrida. Ham Suhridena. Ham Suhridena va. To you. I, to you, am a very dear friend. Hrid means heart. Suhridena. You are very dear to me. I'm dear. I have much friendship. Feelings of friendship towards you. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that he is the friend of all living beings. Bhaktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam yatvamam kshantim ichati. This verse Srila Prabhupada declares as the peace formula. And in the 1960s, devotees were distributing, I think it was Prabhupada's commentary on that verse as a tract, as a pamphlet from the Bhagavad Gita, either a lecture or a commentary from the Gita on that verse as the peace formula. During the 1960s, there was lots of opposition to the war in Vietnam and lots of protest marches. Led by the youth who were against that war. So these were peace rallies. And devotees would go into those peace rallies distributing this peace formula. And there is a man who was connected with ISKCON, Indian gentleman. He was connected with ISKCON in Europe, particularly in Italy. The grandson of, I believe, some relative of Mahatma Gandhi. So Mahatma Gandhi, he is considered also as a peace ambassador. He fought the British, but via non-violence, non-violent resistance.
Let's switch it off.
So Ramsai Purohit was his name. He was flying from Rome to New York, to the United Nations. He was working with the United Nations as well as with the Vatican as some kind of a peace ambassador, following in his veneered grandfather's footsteps. I believe it was his grandfather. And when he was at the airport in Rome, waiting for his flight, as he was going to get his flight, a devotee sold him Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he chanced to open to that verse. Bhaktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam yatvamam kshantim ichati. Shanti, you can have peace when you know that Krishna is the real enjoyer. The object of all sacrifice. Lord of everybody. As well as the dear friend, these four things. Krishna says, if you understand these four things, then you will have peace. Not just the enjoyer, but the person who gives you the results of any sacrifice you have made so that you can enjoy. So, when he read Prabhupada's purport to that verse, Ram Sahai Purohit turned around from his gate and walked back out of the airport because there was an address in the back of the book. ISKCON, Rome. And he had to speak to the person that sold his book and wanted to know where he got it from and to understand more, to meet the author. So he ended up meeting the acharya of that time. No longer acting as an acharya, but still a devotee, Bhagavan. He met with Bhagavan and they discussed for hours. And
he started to work for ISKCON as a peace ambassador for ISKCON in Italy. Italy is it's a Roman Catholic country, so the potential conflict, not understanding that Krishna or God is the same person who is the ultimate enjoyer, the object of sacrifice, the Lord of all, and the friend of all living entities. Then there could be conflict between ISKCON and other religions, such as the Roman Catholic Church. So because he already had relationships with the Vatican, then ISKCON engaged him in setting up dialogue with the church, and they visited every single, I don't know what they call it in the Catholic tradition, every parish in Italy, and met with the local priest and bishop and cardinal, and presented them with some of Prabhupada's books, some gifts from Villa Vrindavan. And yeah, they did that service over several years. They visited every single person they could, just to have some discussion. We have the same mission. We have similar principles. We are brothers. We're trying to share God consciousness. We practice the tradition of the Gita of ancient India. It was a very effective campaign. In other countries, we've had so much conflict with the church. Particularly in Poland, I've personally experienced what that conflict can be. Having festivals cancelled, having pressure put on mayors to not allow us to have any space in the city, not to rent a hall, not to do anything. Having police sent to stop our Harinam, but behind it is the priest. Putting leverage on the authorities that if you let these people do what they're doing, then you're going to lose the next election. I will assure you of it. I will make sure of it. So very much involved in politics. We have experienced a lot of that. Even having people come in with baseball bats and beat up the people at our festivals, and apparently behind it all is a priest. So, Poland has had a lot of that conflict, but Italy has never had it, and it's the seat of the Vatican because of these efforts of Ram Sahai Purohit, who actually ended up taking initiation as well. Because of this verse. This verse was the Yatvamam Shanti Mrichati. You can achieve peace if you know these things. So here as well, Krishna is very pleased. He's saying that I am the Sokrida. And he's pleased. Why? Because he sees peaceful relations. So it's two angles. The Gita is saying that if you understand that Krishna is your friend, then you will be peaceful. Or that Krishna is the friend of everyone, then you will be peaceful. Here Krishna is seeing the peace between them and says, you are very dear to me, I'm very dear to you, I consider you very dear. So this works from both ways. So let's consider this a little further. How is it by understanding these things makes us peaceful? And why is it that when we have that peace and unity, Krishna is pleased? These are two questions that we can consider. So I would like to open the question to you to begin with. Krishna says that if people understand that he is the enjoyer of all the fruits of sacrifice, that he is the Lord of sacrifice, that he is the Lord of all living entities, and that he is the best friend and well-wisher of all living entities. How is it that by understanding these things we will have peace?
The harmony.
How? Why?
Because he's in charge and we're doing the right thing and pleasing him. He's
Okay. So Krishna won't. Krishna won't slap us over the wrist or knock us on the head if we understand those things. Yes, Bumsi?
It seems that there's a lot of frustration when people are trying to enjoy Krishna's energies without connecting them to Him. Just
very good.
Material resources are limited.
Okay.
So there's some for me, but not enough to handle.
Okay. So it's not just from Krishna's side that Krishna's not going to punish you if you understand those things, but if you understand that Krishna is the Lord and you engage in His with His energies in that way, then you're going to find that harmony. Nice.
Krishna becomes the center of all our activities.
Okay.
Only that to please Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why. You know.
Right. Prabhupada would compare the keeping Krishna in the center to when the stone falls into the river. It makes a ripple, and then within that ripple is another ripple, and so many ripples are concentric circles, because there is one stone or a drip of water. Water dripping into the lake or the river creates concentric circles, but they all expand from one because there is a single center. In the same way, if Krishna is the center, then there can be harmonious circles around. Yes? Yeah.
We know as a living entity here, we are very limited in everything.
Right.
There's nothing much we can do about so many things. We know that.
Mm.
When we know Krishna is the Supreme, he's our best friend.
Yeah.
So if I can please my best friend, who is the best of everyone,
right. All
the good hands.
So you're peaceful. Okay, nice.
People go for like cricketer's friendship or celebrity friendship just because they want some recognition or something from the society which they can't get directly.
Mm-hmm.
Through that, they're afraid they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
So Krishna is saying, I'm the best of everyone,
mm-hmm.
and I'm the best friend of each as well.
Right. Krishna has all the hookups. Krishna has all the connections, so if you're connected with Krishna, then what do you have to worry about? It's not what you know, it's who you know. If you know Krishna, then... Yes?
I just want to know, is a peace like a mutual sort of thing, or is it like bliss? Is it a spiritual bliss, or a peace is just like the duality type thing you're talking about? Either. Well, obviously, if you're...
Krishna says Shanti, so interpret it how you will.
Very sync with the all blissful, ecstatic personality God here, but of course we will be ecstatic as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
We're getting along with him.
Right.
Okay. With him.
That's nice.
It's going to be a blissful experience.
Okay, nice. Someone else? Okay, so we have some different thoughts here. Essentially, what I'm hearing is that when we are connected with Krishna, when we know that Krishna is our friend, when we know that Krishna is our master, He is the beneficiary of all things, then we're going to be peaceful. We're not going to worry. We're going to also have good relations. It means if other people understand this as well, then we'll have a common understanding, a common center. So these are nice ideas, valid realizations. I would like to add that if we understand that Krishna is everyone's friend, that Krishna is everyone's master, then how will we make enmity with them? Yeah? So you may see some fault. You may see some misbehavior, misdemeanor. But Krishna is saying that this person is his friend. This person is, he's my friend, he's also his friend. And so out of respect for Krishna, then you will respect this person as well. Yeah? They may be what they are, but they're Krishna's friend. They're Krishna's person. Whether they know that Krishna is their master or not, they are still Krishna's servant. Yeah? They may be working so hard for the attainment of different things in this world. So somebody may have more, somebody may have less. But who gave it to them? Krishna gave it to them. So then who are you to be upset or jealous or envious or try to take it away from them? Krishna gave it to them, he didn't give it to you. If you love Krishna, you will respect. And you will say, maybe I don't understand, Krishna has some other plan, but I respect Krishna. Who knows what his plan is? Man proposes, Krishna disposes. It's not really politically correct. Humans dispose, Krishna disposes. Humans propose, Krishna disposes. You have to include the women as well. So who knows what Krishna's plan is, that they have more, or this position, or whatever else. He is the Lord, he is the one who's giving them the results of their sacrifices. He is also enjoying the sacrifice they make. So we sacrifice officially, as maybe by some karmakanda, havan or something, to get some good benefits. We may be thinking we are doing the sacrifice for the demigods, chanting demigod mantras, but the ultimate enjoyer of all sacrifices is Krishna. So we can also understand, and even if someone's not doing a yajna, whatever sacrifice they're making, they're chasing after Krishna's opulence. Some are chasing after Krishna's wealth, some are chasing after Krishna's beauty, some are chasing after Krishna's fame. Everyone is chasing after Krishna. Maybe they want it separate from him, but nonetheless, they are chasing after Krishna. Two days ago in my apartment, we have some rainbow lorikeets that come around sometimes for something to eat. Sometimes cockatoos, sometimes they always come in pairs. So these two lorikeets came to the kitchen window, and I called Chandrasekhar, visiting from China. We were in Gurukul together in Mayapur. Called him and said, look, these are the parrots that come here from time to time for prasadam. I said, you can feed them with your hand. So I gave him some bread. He held it on his hand. And usually I like hold it like this and let them eat from my hand. But Chandra kept it on his hand, and so the parrot had to come onto his hand to get the prasadam. And then Chandra just kind of walked with him into the house. And this guy was completely comfortable, not disturbed at all. And then he like put out the other hand, and the other parrot came on that hand as well. So he had one on his arm, one on his hand. Later we let them back out. And then they, half an hour later, they decided they were hungry again, and this time they had become bold. They just flew in the window and landed on my wife's shoulder. I said, Chandra, what have you taught them? But when they came in and you could see them so close, and I said, just look at Krishna's beauty. They are, you know, carrying Krishna's beauty with all of those wonderful colors. So they're parrots and they're beautiful, but whose beauty is it? It's Krishna's beauty. They are recipients of a little bit of it, so we can see it in them. But Krishna's opulence is all throughout the manifestation. Wherever there's wealth, that is Krishna's wealth. Somebody has it. But the devotees say, look at Krishna's wealth. Look at Krishna's beauty. Look at Krishna's fame. How attractive it is to people. So people chase after these things. They're chasing after Krishna. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. Krishna is the enjoyer of all sacrifice. So they're sacrificing to get this opulence. but it is his opulence. And so they are serving Krishna indirectly. The devotee can appreciate that. So when the devotee sees, anyone who understands that Krishna is the enjoyer of sacrifice, is the lord of all living entities, is the friend, they're peaceful. They can respect other living entities and so be peaceful. And the more people can understand this and appreciate this, the more we have peace in society. Now, when people don't engage in such respect, what does it mean? You just turn it around now.
Exploitation. Exploitation.
Okay.
Chaos.
The point that I'm making, we can turn it around. If you understand that Krishna is the enjoyer, the lord and master, the friend, then you're peaceful. Now, if you're not peaceful, what does it mean? Okay. You're thinking that you're the master, you're the enjoyer. Okay, but so that would create conflict, wouldn't it, as well? Because if you say, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the master. Krishna is your enemy, but everyone else is also your enemy.
I'm trying to enjoy the same thing.
Yeah, then you have limited resources. Scarcity of resources creates conflict. If you have the fame, then I don't have it, then I can't have it. If you have that wealth, then I can't have it. So I need to take your wealth in order for me to have. Class conflict, racial conflict, ethnic conflict, religious conflict, national conflict, world conflict, because of this scarcity mentality. There are limited resources. We have to be in conflict to try to secure them for ourselves. It means we're not understanding Krishna. We're not understanding Krishna as the friend, the well-wisher, the master, the object of sacrifice, the enjoyer of sacrifice, and the person who gives the results of sacrifice. So if we're not understanding these things, it creates chaos, creates conflict. It means we're not Krishna conscious, so Krishna is not pleased. Krishna wants us to be properly situated. He wants us to be peaceful. So Krishna is not pleased when we don't understand these things. If we understand them, we are peaceful. If we understand Krishna, we are peaceful. If we don't understand them, if we're not peaceful, it means we don't understand Krishna. Or who's to say they fully understand Krishna? But at least in relation to these things. If you're not peaceful, means you're not understanding that Krishna is your friend, that Krishna is the master, that Krishna is the object of sacrifice, the person who awards the fruits of sacrifice, the enjoyer of sacrifice. So this is particularly disheartening when we see conflict amongst devotees, because devotees are supposed to understand these things. Of all people, devotees are supposed to have this respect. And therefore, offenses towards devotees is considered the most most dangerous of all the offenses against the Lord. The most dangerous offense towards the Lord is the offense towards his devotee. How amazing is that? The worst offense you can commit towards Krishna is to offend his devotee. Because he's the friend. He's the well-wisher. He's the master. So, you can say something about me, but don't say anything about a child or someone who's dependent on me. Krishna said, you can say something about me, Krishna said, don't say about my devotee. Well, that's very disturbing to Krishna.
What if some other devotee disturbed that devotee and then he said something, they're both to blame him? It's a very good.
That's even more disturbing to Krishna.
I just want to ask, Krishna's all blissful and detached and everything. So does he actually suffer if you're fighting with each other or doing something wrong? Does he suffer in such a way? Is he unhappy, displeased? What is that word? He's a person, he's got feelings.
Krishna's upmarama and uptakama means he's self-satisfied and he's without any desire. So his suffering is not like our suffering. If someone takes something away from us, we suffer because we're attached. So his suffering is not on his dissatisfaction or sadness is not on account of attachment. But he is, but he feels compassion. He feels sadness when he sees the devotee or the living entity acting foolishly, that they're losing opportunity for themselves. So if somebody, you know, takes your coat or if somebody injures you, you suffer. If you see someone else suffering, you may also feel pain. But it's a different type of pain. It's a noble pain. It's a suffering that is, in some way, although it is painful, there is, you're suffering more out of love than out of attachment. That's a noble suffering. So the devotee does feel that, and Krishna himself also feels that. At the same time, the devotee is also jnana-chakshush, can see things in a much wider perspective. So the devotee is not doesn't become frantically emotional about a thing, in the sense that the devotee knows happiness and distress come and go. This is one life out of many lives. This is a temporary situation. This should be an impetus for trying something, for something high. So the devotee is also detached from... the devotee is more disturbed by the ignorance that surrounds a person's suffering. Does that make sense?
Like a sinner, not sinner.
Not exactly. When you see someone acting in a way that is self-injurious, and you can see it, but they can't, that's the suffering the devotee might experience, that if only this person could understand. You see someone caught up in a vicious cycle. So the living entity is caught up in a vicious cycle of birth and death. The devotee can see it. But the person who's caught up in that conflict, they can't. So that can be disturbing. But it's a compassionate disturbance. Uh, So in that way, Krishna is disturbed, but it doesn't disturb his personal satisfaction and bliss. Does that make sense? If we're in a situation, you know, social relations, and that other person is playing the role of a victim and they're angry and they're disturbed and they're doing all of this to themselves and you're on the side and observing it, it doesn't affect your own satisfaction, your own bliss, your own life. But at the same time, you feel some sadness for that person. It's not your sadness, but you feel something for them. That's called sympathy or empathy. Doesn't disturb your emotions. Your emotions are balanced and peaceful. But you empathize with that person's pain. That's the difference between love and attachment. When we're attached, we get disturbed. But you can love and feel for that person without being disturbed.
So if you're getting upset by someone else's pain, that means you've got a problem yourself with your own.
It means
so
you're getting...
reminds you of your own situation then.
Possibly. Yes, Vijayagaranga Prabhu.
Just on that point, I was thinking that in Bhagavad Gita, in the section, Krishna talks about austerities and mode of ignorance, and he mentions something about people torturing the elements of the body and the super soul within. And I was just thinking, maybe could it be said that like we're disturbing the super soul, but Krishna, like Goloka Vrindavan Krishna, even though they're non-different, he's completely unaffected, whereas the super soul is kind of disturbed because, you know, he's dwelling within.
I would say the same what you said applies to the supersoul. It's just that the supersoul is compared to the bird. So the supersoul is always watching. He's a witness in the heart. And he's waiting. So he's waiting for you to do the right thing and to give you the benefits of doing the right thing. But as long as we're not doing the right thing, he's witnessing. And so that wait, when you're waiting for someone and waiting and waiting and waiting, that's disturbing. Especially when you see them doing something totally foolish and self-destructive. So you're waiting and maybe trying to give a signal, but they're not taking notice. So in that way, what did Prabhupada say? Torturing the supersoul.
No, it says torture the elements of the body and the supersoul. Right?
Yeah. So in that way, you might say the supersoul is tortured. That he's waiting so long and witnessing this self-destruction of the living entity. But not that he's in any way physically or even emotionally tortured. But he much prefers, because he's waiting, so it means he's waiting for you to do something else, to do something that's that gives value, that benefits the self and benefits others. And the super soul is peaceful and happy when the living entity does that. Yes, Prabhuji.
Isn't Prabhupada Satchitananda, so how it could suffer, how could it feel any remorse?
Because of identifying with the body, the mind and the body.
No, you say super soul is suffer. Super soul doesn't suffer, doesn't feel anything,
is it? The super soul definitely feels. The super soul is Krishna. Yeah, but in terms of a physical body being made to suffer, but no. Anyone else? Yes, Adi Purusha.
Could you give me a point where you said empathize for others out of love and not get disturbed? That is, and the other one is attachment is when you get disturbed.
When you're attached to somebody, you also want to control them because you want to possess them. You want to have them. this is mine, my wife or husband or boyfriend or son or daughter or disciple or friend, and they have to be a certain way to be yours. She's not my wife, she's not my son anymore or daughter anymore. He's not my father, because they're not a certain way that they have to be yours. You cannot control or possess them anymore. So the sadhu doesn't control or possess anyone. In our material social relations, our attachment is conditional. That person has to be a certain way that I can possess and control them, and then I can say that they are my something. My friend, my father, my son, my daughter, my wife, my husband. And as long as they are in that mold, we can say my. So we must control and possess. That is attachment. Control and attachment. Control and possession. But the sadhu gives spiritual understanding. The sadhu gives does para upakara, supreme welfare. But it doesn't need to possess that person, or to own them, or to control them. And so, when that person does what is beneficial for themselves, the sadhu is very happy. The sadhu blesses. May you live long. May all of your endeavors be successful. Sadhu. But if that sadhu does something crazy, the sadhu doesn't go crazy. If that person does something that is self-destructive, the sadhu doesn't become emotional and feel that it's the end of the world, or suffer on account of a sense of rejection. The sadhu wants the best for the person, but the sadhu's love, the sadhu will give everything for that person, but their love and their giving is unconditional. Making sense? Yeah? So attachment and love, they are different things. And in the material world, we mostly mistake attachment for love. I think I'm in love. What does it mean you think you're in love? I think I love you. The sadhu loves, doesn't have to think about it. When I think I love you, it means you have to be. Last week we spoke about leadership by control and leadership by inspiration. It's the same point. Love as control and love as inspiration. So when the sadhu inspires another person out of love, but doesn't need to control them and possess them, but rather wants to just nurture them and fan them and encourage them to be the best that they are as Krishna's devotee. But the leader who's a controller, or now we're taking a different, someone in a social relation of control, they have to be a certain way, they have to be a certain mold, and my love is conditional to them being that way that I can control them and possess them. My disciples, my followers, my devotees in the temple, as I'm the temple president or the regional secretary, or my followers. So possession and control. And then when they do something, we're hurt. So we're not loving them because Krishna is there, because they're Krishna's dependent, because Krishna is their friend, because Krishna is their master. Because Krishna is the object of all of their sacrifices. We love them because I am their friend. I am their master. I am the object of their sacrifices. And when they step out, when they break out of that and they find someone else to love and to be a friend, to be their master, to be the object of their sacrifice, we feel hurt, we feel betrayed, we feel let down. Making sense? Good point. Yes, Prabhu?
So coming back to what Bhaktam Yajna Tapas, we know it. How to put in practice? And if it, we know. Still we get disturbed if somebody says something, you know, about your feeling in the family life or society life. We know it.
Yeah.
So how to put in practice?
Yeah. So smarana, manana, nididhyasana. That is the Vedic process of education. Smarana means to hear, so we are hearing. And in that sense, we might say, I know. Manana means to contemplate. How does this apply? To see and think in your own words. To see by your own realization how this is. It may also mean, how am I applying? So how am I going to act in relation to this knowledge? This is Krishna's servant. This is Krishna's devotee. This is someone who is sacrificing for Krishna whether they know it or not. How are you going to act on that? That is manana, contemplation. And then nididhyasana means realization. Then you're actually able to live that way. At the stage of manana, sometimes you do right, sometimes others. Sometimes you're seeing them as Krishna's, the person who is Krishna's friend, the person who's Krishna's dependent, and other times not. You're seeing them in relation to yourself and you're wavering between the two. But as you become more practiced and more realized, then that is nididhyasana, and you can be steady. So smarana, manana, nididhyasana, that is the Vedic process. You hear from the guru and then you serve the guru, or you apply what the guru teaches, and then you realize. So just intellectually knowing is not knowing. When you apply it and get realization, then you know. Therefore, Rupa Goswami Pad says, Avacha Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam Jiva Vegam Sarva Mapimam Prativimsha Shishyat. You can make disciples all over the world if you can control. Means you have Nididhyasana. You have realized these things about Krishna. Okay, last question because we are over time.
What was the last Nididhyasana?
Nididhyasana. N-I-D-I? D-Y-A-S-N-A. We are over time. Haribol. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya samaveta bhaktavinda ki jaya nitai gaura premanandini.